Hi, this is Mrs. English, and I'm getting ready to read Book 4 from Paradise Lost, John Milton's Paradise Lost. We just finished Book 3, and in Book 3, we had long formal speeches of God and of His Son. We had more than 400 lines of what has been called a sermon, which is God speaking, telling people why there must be expiation for sin, etc. It's very interesting. We found out in Book 3 that God saw Satan and saw what he was doing, trying to sneak around. And we saw that, according to Milton, line about 93, he knew that man would fall, that man would sin. And he explained theologically Milton's view of free choice and free will, so that it was pointed out. And of course, this is to justify the ways of God to man. That's Milton's sole purpose in writing this epic. And so he explains about free will, and he explains about choice and decisions. He also says he knows what choice we will make. Very interesting. We learned a new vocabulary word. We learned that the word peculiar, Book 3, line 183, means special. It does not mean odd or unusual. In any negative way, it's very positive. It means special. We are God's peculiar people, His special people. And we saw the Son of Man stand up and say that He would pay the price for man so that man could live. Also, Satan touched down onto the globe, and the fiend was there walking around like a vulture. When we finished Book 3, Satan had just gone up to Niphetis' top, a mountain in Assyria. This was believed to be just a little bit north of Eden. And he has arrived now in Book 4 to spy. The argument. Satan, now in prospect of Eden and nigh the place where he must now attempt the bold enterprise which he undertook alone against God and man, falls into many doubts with himself, and many passions, fear, envy, and despair, but at length confirms himself in evil, journeys on to paradise, whose outward prospect and situation is described, overleaps the bounds, jumps over the fence, sits in the shape of a cormorant, we'll find out what a cormorant is, on the tree of life, as highest in the garden to look about him. The garden described Satan's first sight of Adam and Eve, his wonder at their excellent form and happy state, but with resolution to work their fall, overhears their discourse, hence gathers that the tree of knowledge was forbidden them to eat of under penalty of death, and therein intends to found his temptation by seducing them to transgress, then leaves them for a while to know further of their state by some other means. Meanwhile, Uriel, descending on a sunbeam, warns Gabriel, who had in charge the gate of paradise, that some evil spirit had escaped the deep and passed at noon by his sphere in the shape of a good angel down to paradise, discovered after by his furious gestures in the mount. Gabriel promises to find him ere morning. Night coming on, Adam and Eve discourse of going to their rest. Their bower will be described, their evening worship. Gabriel drawing forth his bands of night watch to walk the round of paradise, appoints two strong angels to Adam's bower, lest the evil spirit should be there doing some harm to Adam or Eve sleeping. There they find him at the ear of Eve, tempting her in a dream, and bring him, though unwilling, to Gabriel, by whom questioned, he scornfully answers, prepares resistance, but hindered by a sign from heaven, flies out of paradise. Line 1, Book 4. Oh, for that warning voice, which he who saw the apocalypse heard cry in heaven aloud, then when the dragon, put to second rout, came furious down to be revenged on men. Woe to the inhabitants on earth, that now, while time was, our first parents had been warned the coming of their secret foe, and scaped happily, so scaped his mortal snare. For now Satan, now first inflamed with rage, came down, the tempter, ere the accuser of mankind, line 10, to wreck on innocent, frail man his loss of that first battle and his flight to hell, yet not rejoicing in his speed, though bold, far off, and fearless, nor with cause to boast, begins his dire attempt, which nigh the birth now rolling boils in his tumultuous breast, and like a devilish engine back recoils upon himself. Horror and doubt distract his troubled thoughts, and from the bottom stir the hell within him, for within him hell he brings, line 20, and round about him, not from hell, one step no more than from himself can fly by change of place. Now conscience wakes despair that slumbered, wakes the bitter memory of what he was, what is, and what must be. Line 25, this is Satan despairing when realizing what he was and what he has lost. Worse, what he was and what must be worse. Of worst deeds, worse sufferings must ensue. Sometimes toward Eden, now, which now in his view lay pleasant, his grieved look he fixes sad. Sometimes toward heaven and full blazing sun, which now sat high in his meridian tower. Then much revolving, thus in sighs began. And this is Satan. Oh, thou that with surpassing glory crowned, look'st from thy sole dominion, like the god of this new world, at whose sight all the stars hide their diminished heads, to thee I call, but with no friendly voice, and add thy name, O sun, to tell thee how I hate thy beams that bring to my remembrance from what state I fell, how glorious once above thy spear, till pride and worse ambition threw me down. Line 40. Warring in heaven against heaven's matchless king, ah, wherefore? He deserved no such return from me, whom he created what I was in that bright eminence, and with his good upbraided none, nor was his service hard, line 45. What could be less than to afford him praise, the easiest recompense, and pay him thanks, how do? Yet all his good proved ill in me, and wrought but malice, lifted up so high I stained subjection, and thought one step higher, line 50, would set me highest, and in a moment quit the debt immense of endless gratitude, so burthensome still paying, still to owe, forgetful what from him I still received, and understood not that a grateful mind by owing owes not, but still pays, at once indebted and discharged. What burden then? Oh, had this powerful destiny ordained me some inferior angel, I had stood then happy. Okay, if I wasn't such a wonderful angel, I could have been happy. No unbounded hope had raised ambition. Yet why not? Some other power as great might have aspired, and me, though mean, drawn to his part, but other powers as great fell not, but stand unshaken, from within or from without, to all temptations armed. Line 65. Hadst thou the same free will and power to stand? Thou hadst. Whom hast thou then, or what to accuse, but heaven's free love dealt equally to all? By then his love accursed, since love or hate to me alike it deals eternal woe. Nay, cursed be thou, since against his thy will chose freely what it now so justly rues. Me, miserable, which way shall I fly, infinite wrath and infinite despair? Which way I fly is hell. Myself am hell. 75. And in the lower deep, a lower deep still threatening to devour me opens wide, to which the hell I suffer seems a heaven. Oh, then at last relent. Is there no place left for repentance? None for pardon left? Line 80. None left but by submission, and that word disdain forbids me, and my dread of shame among the spirits beneath, whom I seduced with other promises and other vaunts than to submit. Boasting, I could subdue the omnipotent. Ah, so he regrets that he boasted he could subdue the omnipotent. Ay me, they little know how dearly I abide that boast, so vain. Under what torments inwardly I groan, while they adore me on the throne of hell, with diadem and scepter, high advanced, the lower still I fall, only supreme in misery, such joy ambition finds. But say I could repent and could obtain by act of grace my former state, how soon would height recall high thoughts, how soon unsay what feigned submission swore, ease would recant vows made in pain as violent and void. So Satan here tells us that even if he could repent and be accepted again, that if he was high again, his former state, his height line 95, would just recall high thoughts, and he'd very soon unsay with faked submission, that he swore faked submission, and he would recant all the vows that he would make in pain, because he's in pain now, as violent and void. For never can true reconcilement grow where wounds of deadly hate have pierced so deep, which would but lead me to a worse relapse, line 100, and heavier fall. So should I purchase dear short intermission, bought with double smart. This knows my punisher, therefore as far from granting he, as I from begging peace. Okay, God is as far from granting me forgiveness as I am from begging peace of him. Line 105. All hope excluded thus, behold, instead of us outcast exiled, his new delight mankind created, and for him this world. So farewell hope, and with hope farewell fear, farewell remorse. All good to me is lost. Evil, be thou my good. Be thee, at least, divide an empire with heaven's king. I hold by thee, and more than half perhaps will reign as a man ere long, and this new world shall know. This is really, these are scary lines. Evil, be thou my good, line 110. And what Satan is saying here after he despairs is that, okay, I guess the best thing I can do is go ruin man. Thus while he spake, each passion dimmed his face, thrice changed with pale ire, envy, and despair, which marred his borrowed visage, right, because he's dressed up, and betrayed him counterfeit, if any eye beheld. For heavenly minds from such distempers foul are ever clear, whereof he soon aware, each perturbation smoothed with outward calm. Okay, so each little thing that perturbed him, he smoothed it out so that he could look good on the outside in case someone observed him, so he would not blow his cover, line 120. Smoothed it with outward calm, artificer of fraud, and was the first that practiced falsehood under saintly show, deep malice to conceal, couched with revenge. Yet not enough had practiced to deceive Uriel once warned, whose eye pursued him down the way he went, and on the Assyrian mount saw him disfigured, more than could befall spirit of happy sort. His gestures fierce he marked and mad demeanor, then alone, as he supposed, all unobserved, unseen. So on he fares, and to the border comes of Eden, where delicious paradise, now nearer, crowns with her enclosure green, as with a rural mound the champaign head of a steep wilderness, whose hairy sides with thicket overgrown, grotesque and wild access denied, and o'erhead upgrew insuperable height of loftiest shade, cedar and pine and fir and branching palm, as a sylvan scene, and as the ranks ascend, shade above shade, a woody theater of stateliest view. Yet higher than their tops, the verdurous wall of paradise upsprung, which to our general sire, and of course that would be Adam, gave prospect large into his nether empire neighboring round, and higher than that wall, a circling row of goodliest trees, loaded with fairest fruit, blossoms and fruits at once of golden hue appeared, with gay enameled colors mixed, on which the sun more glad impressed his beams, line 150, than in fair evening cloud or human bough, when God hath showered the earth. So lovely seemed that landscape, and of pure, now purer air meets his approach, and to the heart inspires verner delight and joy, able to drive all sadness but despair, line 156. Now gentle gales, fanning their odoriferous wings, dispense native perfumes, and whisper hence they stole those balmy spoils, as when to them who sail beyond the Cape of Hope, and now are past Mozambique, off at sea northwest winds blow Sabaean odors from the spicy shore of Erbe the Blessed, with such delay well pleased they slack their course. Okay, just to enjoy the delicious smell. And many a league cheered with the graceful smell, old ocean smiles. Line 165. So entertained those odorous sweets the fiend who came their bane, though with them better pleased than Asmodeus with the fishy fume. Asmodeus, this is a story from Tobit of the Apocrypha. He was the king of the demons. better pleased than Asmodeus with the fishy fume that drove him, though enamored, from the spouse of Tobit's son, and with a vengeance sent from Media post to Egypt, there fast bound. Now to the ascent of that steep savage hill Satan had journeyed on, pensive and slow, but further way found none so thick entwined. Line 175. As one continued break, the undergrowth of shrubs and tangling bushes had perplexed all path of man or beast that passed that way. One gate there only was, and that looked east on the other side, which when the arch felon saw due entrance, he disdained, and in contempt, line 180, at one slight bound, high overleaped all bound of hill or highest wall, and sheer within, lights on his feet. So he looks to see where the gate is. It's on the east. Naturally, the gate of Eden would be on the east. When the Israelites set up the tabernacle out in the desert, they would always have the opening facing east, always, and that was where Judah camped. So he does not like the looks of the gate in the front, and so he leaps over the wall. And what's it like? There's a Homeric simile here. As when a prowling wolf, whom hunger drives to seek new haunt for prey, watching where shepherds pen their flocks at eve, line 185, in hurdled coats, little groups of sheep, amid the field secure, leaps o'er the fence with ease into the fold. Ooh, that's what he's like, a wolf jumping over the fence to get the sheep. Or as a thief, bent to unhoard the cash of some rich burgher whose substantial doors, cross-barred and bolted fast, fear no assault, in at the window climbs or o'er the tiles, so clomb this first grand thief into God's fold. So since into his church lewd hirelings climb, thence up he flew and on the tree of life, the middle tree and highest there that grew, line 195, sat like a cormorant, a bird, yet not true life thereby regained, but sat devising death to them who lived, nor on the virtue thought of that life-giving plant, but only used for prospect what well used had been the pledge of immortality. So little knows any but God alone to value right the good before him, but perverts best things to worst abuse, or to their meanest use, their least. Beneath him with new wonder now he views, line 205, to all delight of human sense exposed, in narrow room nature's whole wealth, yea more, a heaven on earth, for blissful paradise of God the garden was, by him in the east of Eden planted. Eden stretched her line from Oran eastward to the royal towers of great Seleucia, built by Grecian kings, or where the sons of Eden long before dwelt in Telesar. In this pleasant soil, his far more pleasant garden, God ordained. Out of the fertile ground he caused to grow all trees of noblest kind for sight, smell, taste, and all amid them stood the tree of life, high eminent, blooming ambrosial fruit of vegetable gold, and next to life, our death, the tree of knowledge, grew fast by. Line 221. Knowledge of good, bought dear by knowing ill. Southward, through Eden, went a river large, nor changed his course, but through the shaggy hill, passed underneath, engulfed, for God had thrown that mountain as his garden mould high raised, upon the rapid current, which through veins of porous earth, with kindly thirst updrawn, rose a fresh fountain, and with many a rill watered the garden, hence united fell down the steep glade, and met the nether flood, which from this darksome passage now appears, and now divided into four main streams, runs diverse, wandering, many a famous realm, and country whereof here needs no account. Line 235. But rather to tell how, if art could tell, how from that sapphire fount the crisped brooks, rolling on orient pearl and sands of gold, with mazy error and pendant shades, ran nectar, visiting each plant, and fed flowers worthy of paradise, which not to nice art in beds and curious knots, but nature boon poured forth profuse on hill and dale and plain. So the plants are have an underground watering system. Both where the morning sun first warmly smote the open field, line 245, and where the unpierced shade embrowned the noontime bowers. Thus was this place, a happy rural seat of various view, groves whose rich trees wept odorous gums and balm, others whose fruit burnished with golden rind hung amiable, Hesperian, fables true, making the fables of the Hesperus true. the Greek Garden of the Hesperides is where the famous Tree of Life was. It was a golden apple tree, and it was an apple from that tree that Ate, the goddess of discord, threw a golden apple inscribed for the fairest into the group of Aphrodite, Hera, and must be Athena, and they all reached for it. And of course, Paris, the Trojan prince, was chosen to select who to give that apple to, and each of the goddesses promised him something wonderful, and he chose Aphrodite because she promised him the most beautiful woman in the world. And it is from that fable, that Hesperian fable here mentioned in line 250, that's where we get the misinformation that the forbidden fruit was an apple, because of the Garden of the Hesperides, it was an apple tree, and we are mixing up the myth with the garden. If true, hear only, and of delicious taste. Betwixt them lawns or level downs and flocks grazing the tender herb were interposed, or palmy hillock, or the flowery lap of some irrigorous valley spread her store, flowers of all hue, and without thorn the rose, roses with no thorns. Another side, umbrageous grots and caves of cool recess, o'er which the mantling vine lays forth her purple grape and gently creeps luxuriant. Meanwhile, murmuring waters fall, line 260, down the slope hills, dispersed or in a lake, that to the fringed bank with myrtle crowned her crystal mirror holds, unite their streams, the birds their choirs apply, airs, vernal airs, breathing the smell of field and grove, attune the trembling leaves, while universal Pan, knit with the graces and the hours in dance, led on the eternal spring. Not that fair field of Enna, where Proserpine, gathering flowers, herself a fairer flower, by gloomy Dis was gathered. Here is another comparison for those who studied classical, line 270. He's saying it isn't like what happened when Proserpine was gathering flowers one day, and gloomy Dis, Hades, came up and grabbed her and took her down to be queen of the underworld. And line 271, where she was gathered, which cost Ceres, this is her mother Demeter, all that pain to see her through the world, nor that sweet grove of Daphne by Orontes and the inspired Castalian spring, that's the spring of water at Delphi, might with this paradise of even strive. So none of these places can compare with Edom. Eden, not the beautiful place where Proserpina was gathering flowers when she was kidnapped, not the beautiful Castalian spring at Delphi, nor that Nicaean isle girt with the river Triton, where old Cham, whose Gentile Ammon call, and Libyan Jove, hid Amalthea and her florid son, young Bacchus, from his stepdame Rhea's eye, nor where Abassan kings their issue guard, line 280. These are all classical references of beautiful places. Mount Amara, though this by some supposed true paradise, under the Ethiop line by Nilus's head, enclosed with shining rock, a whole day's journey high, but wide remote from this Assyrian garden, where the fiend saw undelighted all delight, all kind of living creatures new to sight and strange. Two, now he notices something, two of far nobler shape, erect and tall, godlike erect, with native honor clad, in naked majesty, this is line 290, in naked majesty seemed lords of all, and worthy seemed, for in their looks divine, the image of their glorious maker shone, truth, wisdom, sanctitude, severe and pure, severe but in true filial freedom placed, whence true authority in men, though both not equal, as their sex not equal seemed, for contemplation he and valor formed, for softness she and sweet attractive grace, he for God only, she for God in him. His fair large front and eye sublime declared, line 300, absolute rule, and hyacinthine locks, round from his parted forelock, so he has long curly hair, manly hung clustering, but not beneath his shoulders broad, shorter than shoulder length. She, as a veil down to the slender waist, line 305, her unadorned golden tresses wore disheveled, but in wanton ringlets waved as the vine curls her tendrils, which implied subjection, but required with gentle sway, and by her yielded, by him best received, yielded with coy submission, modest pride, and sweet reluctant amorous delay. Now, this is actually a beautiful picture that Milton is painting of Adam and Eve. They have their gender roles, as we would say today, absolutely figured out. They're not worried who is in charge of anything. They're very perfectly suited for one another, and submission, modest pride, none of these things bother them. Nor those mysterious parts were then concealed, because they're naked. Then was not guilty shame, dishonest shame of nature's works, honor dishonorable, sin bred. How have ye troubled all mankind with shows instead, mere shows of seeming pure, and banished from man's life his happiest life, simplicity and spotless innocence? So passed they naked on, nor shunned the sight of God or angel, for they thought no ill. Line 320. So hand in hand they passed, the loveliest pair that ever since in love's embraces met. That's a beautiful line. Adam, the goodliest man of men since born his sons, the fairest of her daughters, Eve, under a tuft of shade that on a green stood whispering soft, by a fresh fountain side they sat them down, and after no more toil of their sweet gardening labor than sufficed, to recommend cool zephyr, the wind, and made ease more easy, wholesome thirst and appetite more grateful, to their supper fruits they fell. Okay, so they've worked just hard enough to enjoy the breeze, be a little bit thirsty, and look for supper. Nectarine fruits, which the compliant boughs yielded them. Okay, so they don't have to work hard to get their food. Compliant boughs, it's very easy. They just reach up and get their food. Sidelong as they sat, recline on the soft downy bank damasked with flowers. The savory pulp they chew, line 335. And in the rind, still as they thirsted, scoop the brimming stream. Nor gentle purpose, nor endearing smiles wanted. They're not lacking anything. Wanted, this is the 1611 use of that, the King James, still here in 1678. Wanted means lacked. Nor youthful dalliance as beseems fair couple. So maybe they're joking or teasing, they're enjoying one another. Linked in happy nuptial, which means a marriage, anything nuptial has to do with marriage, in happy nuptial league, alone as they. About them, frisking, played all beasts of the earth, since wild, and of all chase in wood or wilderness, forest or den, sporting the lion ramped, and in his paw dandled the kid, that'd be a baby goat. Bears, tigers, ounces, pards, that would be a leopard, gambled before them. The unwieldy elephant, to make them mirth, used all his might and wreathed his lithe proboscis, so the elephant is trying to make them laugh. Close the serpent, sly, insinuating, wove with Gordian twine his braided train, and of his fatal guile gave proof unheeded. Others on the grass, line 350, couched, and now filled with pasture gazing sat, or bedward ruminating, for the sun declined, was hastening now, with prone career to the ocean isles and to the ascending scale of heaven, the stars that usher evening rose. So it's dusk. When Satan, still in gaze, as first he stood, scarce thus at length, failed speech recovered, sad. O hell! What do mine eyes with grief behold? Into our room of bliss, thus advanced, thus high advanced, creatures of another mold. Earth-born, perhaps? All right, he's disguised as a serpent, and he's very jealous. Not spirits! Yet to heavenly spirits bright, little inferior, okay, they're only a little inferior than heavenly spirits, whom my thoughts pursue with wonder. And could love, so lively shines in them, divine resemblance, because of course we're created in the image of God, and such grace, the hand that formed them on their shape hath poured, line 365. Ah, gentle pair, ye little think how nigh your change approaches, when all these delights will vanish and deliver ye to woe. If you're taking notes, you can make a note there to later check out book 4, lines 105 to 13. More woe, the more your taste is now of joy. Happy, but for so happy, ill-secured long to continue, and this high seat your heaven ill-fenced for heaven to keep out, such a foe as now is entered, yet no purposed foe to you whom I could pity thus forlorn, though I unpitied. League with you I seek. Okay, I'm looking to have contact with you, get in league with you, line 375, and mutual amity so straight, so close, that I with you must dwell, or you with me henceforth. My dwelling happily may not please like this fair paradise. Your sense, yet such accept your Maker's work, he gave it me, which I as freely give. Hell shall unfold to entertain you to her widest gates and send forth all her kings. There will be room, not like these narrow limits, to receive your numerous offspring. If no better place, line 385, thank him who puts me loath to this revenge on you who wrong me not for him who wronged. And should I at your harmless innocence melt, as I do, yet public reason just, honor an empire with revenge enlarged, by conquering this new world, compels me now to do what else, though damned, I should abhor. All right, if he didn't have such an important mission, he almost wouldn't be able to do it. So spake the fiend, and with necessity the tyrant's plea excused his devilish deeds. Then from his lofty stand on that high tree, down he alights among the sportful herd of those four-footed kinds, himself now one. So now he's a four-footed animal. Now other, as their shape served best his end, nearer to view his prey. So he's shape-changing. And unespied, to mark what of their state he might more learn by word or action marked. About them round, a lion now he stalks with fiery glare. Then, as a tiger, who by chance hath spied in some purlieu the gentle fawns at play, straight couches close. Then rising, changes oft his couchant watch, as one who chose his ground, whence rushing he might surest seize them both, gripped in each paw. When Adam first of men, to first of women Eve, thus moving speech turned him all ear, to hear new utterance flow. Line 410. So now he stops and listens, because he realizes Adam is speaking. Sole partner and sole part of all these joys, dearest, the dearer thyself than all, needs must the power that made us and for us this ample word be infinitely good, and of his good as liberal and free as infinite, line 415, that raised us from the dust and placed us here in all this happiness, who at his hand have nothing merited, nor can perform aught whereof he hath need. He requires from us no other service than to keep this one, this easy charge, of all the trees in paradise that bear delicious fruit so various, not to taste that only tree of knowledge, implanted by the tree of life, that so near grows death to life, whatever death is. Line 425. Some dreadful thing, no doubt, for well thou knowest God hath pronounced it death to taste that tree, the only sign of our obedience left among so many signs of power and rule conferred upon us, and dominion given over all other creatures that possess earth, air, and sea. Then let us not think hard one easy prohibition. Who enjoy free leave so large to all things else, and choice unlimitable, in manifold delights? But let us ever praise him and extol his bounty, following our delightful task to prune these growing plants, and tend these flowers, which were it toilsome, yet with thee were sweet. Even if it was hard work to be a gardener here, it would be wonderful work, because I am with you. Line 440. To whom thus Eve replied, O thou, for whom and from whom I was formed, flesh of thy flesh, and without whom am I to no end, my guide and head, what thou hast said is just and right, for we to him indeed all praises owe, and daily thanks, I chief, who enjoy so far the happier lot, enjoying thee preeminent by so much odds, while thou, like consort to myself, canst nowhere find. That oft I remember when from sleep I first awaked. Okay, often I look back and I remember the first time I woke up, line 450, and found myself reposed under a shade on flowers, much wondering where and what I was, whence hither brought, and how. Not distant, far from hence, a murmuring sound of waters issued from a cave and spread into a liquid plain, then stood unmoved, line 455, pure as the expanse of heaven, I hither went with unexperienced thought, and laid me down on the green bank, to look into the clear smooth lake, that to me seemed another sky. As I bent down to look just opposite, a shape within the watery gleam appeared. So Eve bends over the water, looks in, and does not realize she's looking at a reflection of herself. A shape within the watery gleam appeared, bending to look on me. I started back. It started back. But pleased, I soon returned. Pleased, it returned as soon, with answering looks of sympathy and love. There I had fixed mine eyes till now, and pined with vain desire had not a voice thus warned me. Okay, she'd still be looking there, looking at it, pining for desire for it, if a voice had not thus warned her. What thou seest, what there thou seest, fair creature, is thyself. With thee it came and goes, but follow me, and I will bring thee where no shadow stays thy coming, line 470, and thy soft embraces. He whose image thou art, him thou shalt enjoy, inseparably thine. To him shalt bear multitudes like thyself, and hence be called mother of human race. Line 475. What could I do but follow straight, invisibly thus led, thus I till I espied thee, fair indeed and tall, under a platan, a plane tree. Yet methought less fair, less winning soft, less amiably mild than that smooth watery image. So she first saw Adam and thought, wow, isn't he handsome, fair indeed and tall, under a tree, but not as pretty, not as soft looking as the image I saw in the water. So he does not look like her. Line 480. Back I turned, thou following criest aloud. So return, fair Eve, whom flyest thou? Whom thou flyest, of him thou art, his flesh, his bone, to give thee being, I lent out of my side to thee, nearest my heart, substantial life, to have thee by my side, henceforth an individual, soulless, dear. Line 486. So she turns to run from him, and he says, don't run from me. The person you're running from is who you came from. Part of my soul I seek thee, and thee claim my other half. With that thy gentle hand seized mine. Okay, so there, with that, your hand seized mine, I yielded, and from that time, see how beauty is excelled by manly grace, line 490, and wisdom, which alone is truly fair. So spake our general mother, and with eyes of conjugal attraction, unreproved, and meek surrender, half embracing, leaned on our first father. Half her swelling breast, naked, met his, under the flowing gold of her loose tresses hid. He, in delight, both of her beauty and submissive charms, smiled with superior love, as Jupiter on Juno smiles, line 500, when he imprangs the clouds that shed May flowers, and presses her matron lip with kisses pure. Aside, the devil turned for envy, yet with jealous leer malign eyed them askance, and to himself thus plained. Line 505. Sight hateful, sight tormenting, thus these two imparadised in one another's arms. The happier Eden shall enjoy their fill of bliss on bliss, while I to hell am thrust, where neither joy nor love, but fierce desire among our other torments, not the least, line 510, still unfulfilled with pain of longing pines. Yet let me not forget what I have gained from their own mouths. All is not theirs, it seems. He's learned their one weakness. One fatal tree there stands, of knowledge called, forbidden them to taste. Knowledge? Forbidden? Suspicious, reasonless. Why should their lord envy them that? Can it be sin to know? Can it be death? And do they only stand by ignorance? Is that their happy state? The proof of their obedience? Line 520. And their faith? O fair foundation laid whereupon to build their ruin! Hence I will excite their minds with more desire to know, and to reject envious commands invented with design to keep them low, whom knowledge might exalt. Line 525. Equal with gods, aspiring to be such, they taste and die. What likelier can ensue? But first, with narrow search, I must walk around this garden, and no corner leave unspied. A chance, but chance, may lead where I may meet some wandering spirit of heaven by fountain side, or in a thick shade retired, from him to draw what further would be learned. He'll look around, see if there's any other spirits here, if he can learn any more. Live while ye may, ye happy pair. Enjoy till I return short pleasures. Line 535. For long woes are to succeed. So saying, his proud step he scornful turned, but with sly circumspection, and began through wood, through waste, or hill, or dale, his roam. Meanwhile, in utmost longitude, where heaven with earth and ocean meets, line 540, the setting sun slowly descended, it's getting dark, and with right aspect against the eastern gate of paradise, leveled his evening rays. It was a rock of alabaster, piled up to the clouds, conspicuous far, winding with one ascent, accessible from earth, one entrance high. The rest was craggy cliff that overhung still as it rose, impossible to climb. Betwixt these rocky pillars, Gabriel sat, chief of the angelic guards, awaiting night. The unarmed youth of heaven, about him exercised heroic games, the unarmed youth of heaven, but nigh at hand celestial armory, shields, helms, and spears hung high with diamond flaming and with gold. Okay, what are Gabriel and the other gatekeepers, what are they doing? These are armed youth of heaven, but they've put their weapons down, and they are exercising here heroic games, and so that would be running, throwing the shot put, archery, all of the types of things that the Greeks would do when they had free time. These would be Olympic-style games. High hung with diamond flaming and with gold, line 555. Hither came Uriel, gliding through the even on a sunbeam, swift as a shooting star in autumn thwarts the night, when vapors fired impress the air and shows the mariner from what point of his compass to beware impetuous winds. He thus began in haste, line 560. Gabriel, to thee thy course by lot hath given charge and strict watch, that to this happy place no evil thing approach or enter in. This day, at height of noon, came to my spear a spirit, zealous as he seemed, to know more of the Almighty's works, and chiefly man, God's latest image. I described his way, bent all on speed, and marked his airy gait. But in the mount that lies from Eden north, where he first lighted, soon discerned his looks alien from heaven, with passions foul obscured. So Uriel is telling Gabriel that he fears that one of those banished crew has come. He discerned his looks. With passions foul obscured, mine eye pursued him still, but under shade lost sight of him. One of the banished crew, I fear, hath ventured from the deep to raise new troubles, line 575. Him thy care must be to find. To whom the winged warrior thus returned, Uriel, no wonder if thy perfect sight amid the sun's bright circle where thou sittest see far and wide. In at this gate none pass the vigilance here placed, but such as come well known from heaven, and since meridian hour no creature hence. If spirit of other sort, so minded, have overleaped these earthly bounds on purpose, hard thou knowest it to exclude spiritual substance with corporeal bar. Okay, you'd be hard-pressed to keep spirits out of here with a gate, line 585. But if within the circuit of these walks, in whatsoever shape he lurk, of whom thou tellest, by morning dawning I shall know. So promised he, and Uriel, to his charge, returned on that bright beam, so he's taken off on the moonbeam again, whose point now raised bore him slope downward to the sun now fallen beneath the Azores, whether the prime orb, incredible how swift, had hither rolled diurnal daily, or this less voluble earth, by shorter flight to the east, had left him there, line 595, arraying with reflected purple and gold the clouds that on this western throne attend. Now came still evening on, and twilight gray had in her sober livery all things clad, silence accompanied for beast and bird, line 600, they to their grassy couch, these to their nests, were slunk, all but the wakeful nightingale, she all night long her amorous descant sang. Silence was pleased. Now glowed the firmament with living sapphires. Hesperus, that led the starry host, rode brightest the stars, till the moon rising in clouded majesty, at length apparent queen unveiled her peerless light, and o'er the dark her silver mantle threw. Line 610. When Adam thus to Eve, fair consort, the hour of night and all things now retired to rest, mind us of like repose. Okay, everything's going to rest. I think we should. Since God hath set labor and rest as day and night to men successive, and the timely dew of sleep now falling with soft slumberous weight inclines our eyelids. Okay, their eyelids are getting heavy. Other creatures all day long rove idle unemployed, and less need rest. Man hath his daily work of body or mind appointed, which declares his dignity, and the rest of heaven on all his ways. Line 620. This is Milton's way, and remember, he is a Puritan, of telling you man was created to work. Work is a good thing. Adam has just pointed out that all of these other animals rove around idly. They're not employed doing anything, and they don't need as much rest, whereas man uses his body and mind, and that is how he has his dignity. That's the part of him that declares his dignity and the regard of heaven on all his ways. While other animals unactive range, and of their doings God takes no account. Tomorrow, ere fresh morning streak the east with virtuprost of light, we must be risen, and at our pleasant labor to reform yon flowery arbors. Okay, we've got to get up early in the morning and prune those arbors. Yonder alleys green, our walk at noon, with branches overgrown that mock our scant manuring, cultivating manually, and requiring more hands than ours to lop their wanton growth. Those blossoms also, and those dropping gums that lie bestrown unsightly and unsmooth, ask riddance. Those things on the ground are just asking to be picked up. If we mean to tread with ease, okay, if we want to walk around, we've got to keep things picked up. Meanwhile, as nature wills, night bids us rest. To whom thus Eve with perfect beauty adorned, my author and disposer, what thou biddest, unargued I obey. Line 635. Here's your perfect wife, according to Milton. And of course, this is a man who was married three times. Unargued I obey, so God ordains. God is thy law, thou mine. To know no more is woman's happiest knowledge and her praise. With thee conversing I forget all time, all seasons and their change, all pleas alike. Line 640. Sweet is the breath of morn, her rising sweet, with charm of earliest birds. Pleasant the sun when first on this delightful land he spreads his orient beams, on herb tree, fruit, and flower, glistering with dew, fragrant the fertile earth. With soft after soft showers, and sweet the coming on of grateful evening mild, then silent night, with this her solemn bird, and this fair morn, and these the gems of heaven, her starry train. Line 650. But neither breath of morn when she ascends with charm of earliest birds, nor rising sun on this delightful land, nor herb, fruit, flower, glistening with dew, nor fragrance after showers, nor grateful evening mild, nor silent night, with this her solemn bird, nor walk by moon, or glittering starlight, without thee is sweet. Line 656. So she just described about 15 lines worth of beautiful things, but none of them are beautiful without Adam. But wherefore all night long shine these for whom this glorious sight, who's going to look at these? For whom is this glorious sight when sleep hath shut all eyes? So Eve is asking a very innocent question. Adam, who are the stars shining for? To whom our general ancestor, this would be Adam, and this is line 659, our general ancestor, Adam, replied, daughter of God and man, accomplished Eve, line 660, those have their course to finish round the earth, by morrow evening and from land to land in order, through to nations yet unborn, ministering light prepared, they set and rise, lest total darkness should by night regain her old possession, and extinguish life in nature and all things, which these soft fires not only enlighten, but with kindly heat of various influence foment and warm, temper or nourish, or in part shed down, line 670, their stellar virtue on all kinds that grow on earth, made hereby apter to receive perfection from the sun's more potent ray. These then, though unbeheld in deep of night, shine not in vain, nor think, though men were none, that heaven would lack spectators, God lack praise. Millions of spiritual creatures walk the earth unseen, both when we wake and when we sleep. All these with ceaseless praise his works behold, both day and night. How often from the steep of echoing hill or thicket have we heard celestial voices, to the midnight air, soul or responsive each to other's note, singing their great creator, oft in bands, line 685, while they keep watch, or nightly rounding walk, with heavenly touch of instrumental sounds in full harmonic number joined, their songs divide the night, and lift our thoughts to heaven. Thus talking, hand in hand, alone they passed on to their blissful bower, line 690. It was a place chosen by the sovereign planter, that is God, when he framed all things to man's delightful use. The roof of thickest covert was inwoven shade, laurel and myrtle. Okay, so the roof of their bower, this is their little cove. It would be like a cave, a very delightful cave made out of the most beautiful plants, woven with laurels and myrtle. And what higher grew on firm and fragrant leaf? Line 695. On either side, acanthus. The acanthus leaf is that very unusual, huge leaf with lots of jagged edges. It is the acanthus leaf that the Corinthians use for the pattern for their column capitals. Acanthus, and each odorous bushy shrub, line 696, fenced up the verdant wall. Each beauteous flower, iris, all hues, roses, and jessamine, reared high their flourished heads between, and wrought mosaic. So their ceiling looks almost like a mosaic, a pattern, a picture, because of all the different colors of flowers. Line 700. Underfoot, the violet, crocus, and hyacinth, these are very tiny, small, short flowers, with rich inlay broidered the ground like embroidery. More colored than with stone of costliest emblem. Other creature here, bird, beast, bird, insect, or worm, durst enter none. Such was their awe of man. So all the other creatures respect man, and no one would ever go in his bower. Line 705. In shadier bower, more sacred and sequestered, though but feigned, even if they tried, Pan or Sylvanus never slept, nor nymph nor faunus haunted. Here in close recess with flowers, garlands, and sweet-smelling herbs, espoused Eve decked first her nuptial bed. Line 710. And heavenly choirs the hymnian sung, what day the genial angel to our sire brought her in naked beauty more adorned, more lovely than Pandora. Pandora is the first woman. She was made as a curse to man, if you are familiar with the Greek mythology at all. She is the one who had the box. Of course, you know, Eve as the first woman is God's last best gift. Pandora, the Greek view of the first woman, is she was sent as a curse. More lovely than Pandora, whom the gods endowed with all their gifts. Line 715. And oh, too like in sad event, when to the unwiser son of Japhet, brought by Hermes, she ensnared mankind with all her fair looks, to be avenged on him who had stole Jove's authentic fire. So Pandora was sent in retribution for Prometheus for giving people fire. Line 720. Thus at their shady lodge arrived, both stand, both turned, and under open sky adored the god that made both sky, air, earth, and heaven which they beheld, the moon's resplendent globe and starry pole. And now they are doing their nightly worship. Thou also madest the night, maker omnipotent, line 725, and thou the day, which we in our appointed work employed have finished happy in our mutual help and mutual love, the crown of all our bliss ordained by thee, and this delicious place for us too large, where thy abundance wants partakers, and uncropped falls to the ground. But thou hast promised from us too a race to fill the earth, who shall with us extol thy goodness infinite, both when we wake and when we seek as now thy gift of sleep, 735. So Adam is committing, as they worship God, that morning and night they and their children to come will worship. This said unanimous, and other rites, observing none, but adoration pure which God likes best, into their inmost bower handed they went, and eased the putting off these troublesome disguises which we wear. Line 740. Straight side by side were laid, nor turned, I ween, Adam from his fair spouse, nor Eve the rites mysterious of connubial love refused. Whatever hypocrites austerely talk of purity and place and innocence, defaming as impure what God declares pure and commands to some, leaves free to all. Line 747. This is Milton the Puritan telling us that the marriage bed is pure, and that the act of marriage is clean and is a place of innocent, and that you cannot defame it and call impure what God declares pure. Our Maker bids increase, who bids abstain? Who bids abstain but our destroyer, foe to God and man? So he's saying our Maker has said, fill the earth and be plentiful, and the one who tells you to abstain to become, in other words, a priest or a nun. Who does that but our destroyer, foe to God and man? This is a jab by Milton, of course, against part of the Catholic Church. Line 750. Hail, wedded love, mysterious law, true source of human offspring, sole propriety and paradise of all things common else. By thee, adulterous lust was driven from men among the bestial herds to range. By thee, founded in reason, loyal, just, and pure, line 775, relations dear, and all the charities of father, son, and brother first were known. Far be it that I should write thee sin or blame, or think thee unbefitting holiest place, perpetual fountain of domestic sweets, line 760, whose bed is undefiled and chaste pronounced, present or past as saints and patriarchs used. Here, love his golden shafts employed. And this is, of course, metaphorical of Cupid, because, of course, he had the bow and arrow, and the shafts are his arrows. Here love his golden shafts employs. Here lights his constant lamp and waves his purple wings. Reigns here and revels, not in the bought smile of harlots, loveless, joyless, unendeared, casual fruition, nor in court amours, mixed dance or wanton mask or midnight ball, or serenade which the starved lover sings to his proud fair, best quitted with disdain. Line 770. These, lulled by nightingales embracing sleep, and on their naked limbs the flowering roof showered roses, which the morn repaired. Sleep on, blessed pair, and oh, yet happiest, if ye seek no happier state, and know to know no more. Line 775. Now had night measured with her shadowy cone halfway uphill this vast sublunar vault, and from their ivory port the cherubim, forth issuing at the accustomed hour, stood armed to their night watches in warlike parade. Line 70. So the cherubim, like warlike parade, are marching, keeping guard. When Gabriel, to his next in power, thus spake, Uzziel, half these draw off, and coast to the south with strictest watch, these others wheel the north, our circuit meets full west. As flame they part, half wheeling to the shield, half to the spear, line 785. From these two strong and subtle spirits he called that near him stood, and gave them thus in charge. Uthariel and Zephon, with winged speed, search through this garden, leave unsearched no nook, but chiefly where those two fair creatures lodge, now laid perhaps asleep, secure of harm. This evening, from the sun's decline, arrived who tells of some infernal spirit seen hitherward bent. Who could have thought? Escaped the bars of hell, on errand bad, no doubt, line 795. So he says, this evening, as the sun declined, there arrived somebody that told us about an infernal spirit who came. Such where ye find, okay, if you find him, seize fast, and hither bring. So saying, on he led his radiant files, dazzling the moon, though these to the bower direct, in search of whom they sought. Him there they found, squat like a toad, close at the ear of Eve, essaying by his devilish art to reach the organs of her fancy, and with them forge illusions as he list, phantasms and dreams. Or if, inspiring venom, he might taint the animal spirits that from pure blood arose, line 805. So Satan was disguised as a toad at the eve of ear, probably whispering in her ear, that from pure blood arise, 805, like gentle breaths from rivers pure, hence raise at least distempered, discontented thoughts, vain hopes, vain aims, inordinate desires, blown up with high conceits engendering pride. Him thus intent, Uthariel, with his spear, touched lightly. So Satan did not notice. He's so intent looking at Eve or whispering, he did not notice, and so Uthariel touched him with his spear, for no falsehood can endure touch of celestial temper, but returns to force of its own likeness. So this celestial temper, this tempered, whatever the spear is made out of, if it touches you, you have to go back to whatever you really are. So Satan's disguise fails him at the touch of Uthariel's spear. Touch of celestial temper, but returns of force to its own likeness. Up he starts, discovered and surprised, as when a spark lights on a heap of nitrous powder, so a little flash of explosion, line 815. Laid fit for the ton some magazine to store against a rumored war, the smutty grain with sudden blaze diffused, inflames the air, so started up in his shape, the fiend. Line 820. Back stepped those two fair angels, half amazed, so sudden to behold the grisly king. So they're shocked at his ugliness. They don't even recognize him. Yet thus, unmoved with fear, accost him soon. Which of those rebel spirits adjudged to hell comest thou, escaped thy prison and transformed? Why sattest thou like an enemy in wait, here watching at the head of these that sleep? Know ye not, then? Said Satan, filled with scorn. He's shocked. They don't recognize Satan. And he's saying, you don't know who I am? You have to ask me. Know ye not me? Ye knew me once, no mate for you, there sitting where ye durst not soar. Not to know me, argue yourselves unknown. Line 830. The lowest of your throng, or if ye know, why ask ye? And superfluous begin your message, like to end as much in vain. To whom thus Zephon, answering scorn with scorn, line 835, think not, revolted spirit, thy shape the same, or undiminished brightness, to be known as when thou stoodest in heaven upright and pure. That glory then, when thou no more wast good, departed from thee, and thou resemblest now thy sin and place of doom obscure and foul. Line 840. So Zephon says, don't you realize? You don't look like what you used to look like when you stood in heaven upright and pure. That glory, when you weren't good anymore, it's gone. Now you look like your sin, and you look like the place of doom, and you stink. But come, for thou, be sure, shalt give account to him who sent us, whose charge is to keep this place inviolable and these from harm. So spake the cherub, and his grave rebuke, line 845, severe in youthful beauty, added grace invincible. Abashed, the devil stood and felt how awful goodness is, and saw virtue in her shape, how lovely, saw and pined his loss. But chiefly to find here observed, his luster visibly impaired, at line 850, yet seemed undaunted. If I must contend, said he, best with the best, the sender not the sent, or all at once more glory will be won, or else be lost. So Satan says, I'm not going to talk to you, you're a kid, take me to your leader. Thy fear, said Zephon bold, will save us trial, what the least can do, single against thee wicked and hence weak. The fiend replied not, overcome with rage. All right, so the fiend does not realize that because he is wicked, now he is weak, that he can never win, and he's very offended. The fiend replied not, overcome with rage, but like a proud steed, a proud horse, reined, went haughty on, champing his iron curb, to strive or fly, line 860. He held it vain, to strive or fly he held it vain. Awe from above had quelled his heart, not else dismayed, nor now drew they nigh the western point, where those half-rounding guards just met, and closing stood in quad squadron joined, awaiting next command. So they're at their meeting place. To whom their chief, Gabriel, from the front line, thus called aloud, line 865. O friends, I hear the tread of nimble feet hasting this way, and now by glimpsing discern Euthyrael and Zephon through the shade, and with them comes a third of regal port, but faded splendor wan, who by his gait and fierce demeanor seems the prince of hell. So he recognizes his walk. Not likely to part hence without contest. He's not likely to leave here without putting up some trouble. Stand firm, for in his look defiance lowers. He scarce had ended when those two approached and brief related whom they brought, line 875, where found, how busied, in what form and posture couched, to whom with stern regard thus Gabriel spake. Why hast thou, Satan, broke the bounds prescribed to thy transgressions, and disturbed the charge of others, who approve not to transgress by thy example, but have power and right to question thy bold entrance on this place, employed, it seems, to violate sleep, and those whose dwelling God hath planted here in bliss? To whom thus Satan, with contemptuous brow, Gabriel, thou hadst in heaven the esteem of wise, and such I held thee, but this question asked puts me in doubt. So Satan says, you know, when you were in heaven, I thought you were smart, and that's what I thought of you. But now that you ask me this, I kind of doubt that. Live there who loves his pain? So Satan is saying, don't you realize anybody put down in that terrible place in hell would leave if they could? And so he's doubting that Gabriel's smart. Lives there, who loves his pain? Who would not, finding way, break loose from hell? Though hither doomed, thou wouldst thyself, no doubt, line 890, and boldly venture to whatever place farthest from pain, where thou mightest hope to change torment with ease, and soonest recompense dole with delight, which in this place I sought, line 895. To thee no reason, okay, it's none of your business, who knowest only good, but evil hast not tried, and wilt object his will, who bound us? Let him surer bar his iron gates, if he intends our stay in that dark durance. Thus much what was asked. The rest is true. They found me where they say, my 900. But that implies not violence or harm. Thus he in scorn, the warlike angel moved, disdainfully, half-smiling, thus replied, O loss of one in heaven to judge of wise. Line 905, since Satan fell, whom folly overthrew, and now returns him from his prison scaped, gravely in doubt whether to hold them wise or not, who ask what boldness brought him hither unlicensed from his bounds in hell prescribed? Line 910, so wise he judges it to fly from pain, however, and to scape his punishment. So judge thou still, presumptuous, till the wrath which thou incurrest by flying meet thy flight sevenfold, and scourge that wisdom back in hell, which taught thee yet no better, that no pain, line 915, can equal anger, infinite provoked. But wherefore thou alone, wherefore with thee, came not all hell broke loose? Is pain to them less pain, less to be fled, or thou than they, less hardy to endure? Now where are your friends? Courageous chief, line 920, the first in flight from pain, hast thou alleged to thy deserted host this cause of flight? Did you tell them why you left? Thou surely hadst not come so fugitive. If they knew you left to flee pain, they would have come too. Line 924, to which the fiend thus answered, frowning stern, not less, I less, no, not that I less endure or shrink from pain, insulting angel. Well thou knowest, I stood thy fiercest when in battle to thy aid. The blasting volleyed thunder made all speed and seconded thy else not dreaded spear. But still thy words at random, as before, line 930, argue thy inexperience what behooves from hard assays and ill successes past a faithful leader, not to hazard all through ways of danger by himself untried. I, therefore, I alone, line 3-5, first undertook to wing the desolate abyss and spy this new created world, whereof in hell fame is not silent, here in hope to find better abode and my afflicted powers to settle here on earth or in mid-air. I was looking for a better place to live. Line 940, though for possession put to try once more what thou and thy gay legions dare against, whose easier business were to serve their Lord high up in heaven with songs to him his throne, and practiced distances to cringe, not fight. Line 945. To whom the warrior angel soon replied, to say and straight unsay, pretending first wise to fly pain, professing next the spy, argues no leader, but a liar traced, Satan, and couldst thou faithful add? Okay, you're speaking from both sides of your mouth. To run from pain, to spy on the new world, you're a liar, not a leader. Line 950. And couldst thou faithful add, O name, O sacred name of faithlessness profaned, faithful to whom? To thy rebellious crew, army of friends, fit body to fit head? Was this your discipline and faith engaged? Your military obedience to dissolve allegiance to the acknowledged power supreme? And thou, sly hypocrite, who now wouldst seem patron of liberty, who more than thou once fawned and cringed and servilely adored heaven's awful monarch? Line 960. Wherefore but in hope to dispossess him and thyself to reign? But mark what I agree, areed thee now. Mark what I advise you now. Avaunt, get out of here. Fly hither whence thou fleddest, if from this hour within these hallowed limits thou appear. You're still here in an hour. Back to the infernal pit I drag thee chained, line 965, and seal thee so, as henceforth not to scorn the facile gates of hell, too slightly barred, so that you can't get out of those gates that were not barred well enough. So threatened he,
But Satan to no threats gave heed, but waxing more in rage replied, line 970, "Then when I am thy captive, talk of chains, proud limitary cherub, but ere then far heavier load thyself expect to feel from my prevailing arm, though heaven's king ride on thy wings, and thou with my compeers, used to the yoke, drawest his triumphant wheels in progress through the road of heaven star-paved." While thus he spoke, the angelic squadron bright turned fiery red, sharpening in mooned horns their phalanx, and began to hem him round with ported spears as thick as when a field of Sarahs, ripe for harvest, waving bends, and Sarahs is grain. So they are hemming around him, forming around him as thick as when grain is ripe for harvest and bends all the same way. Her bearded grove of ears, by way the wind sways them. The careful ploughman doubting stands, lest on the threshing floor his hopeful sheaves prove chaff. Line 985. On the other side, Satan, alarmed, collecting all his might, dilated stood. Like Tenerife or Atlas unremoved, his stature reached the sky, and on his crest sat horror plumed. Nor wanted in his grasp what seemed both spear and shield. Now dreadful deeds, line 990, might have ensued, nor only paradise in this commotion, but the starry cope of heaven, perhaps, or all the elements at least had gone to rack, disturbed and torn with violence of this conflict, line 995, had not soon the Eternal, to prevent such horrid fray, hung forth in heaven his golden scales. Yet seen betwixt Astraea and the scorpion sign, wherein all things created first he weighed, the pendulous round earth with balanced air, line 1000, in counterpoise now ponders all events, battles and realms. In these he put two weights, the sequel each of parting and of fight. So the Eternal One hangs his golden scales where everyone can see them, and he puts the weights of what will happen if they part and what will happen if they fight. The latter, which means the fight, if they fight, quick up flew and kicked the beam, which Gabriel spying thus bestake the fiend, line 1005. So they have all beheld God weighing in this golden balance what will happen if they fight right now, and Satan will lose immediately, is what the scale said. Satan, I know thy strength, and thou knowest mine. Neither our own, but given. Okay? Neither of us has. I know how strong you are. I know how strong I am. And it's not of us. It's what we were given. What folly then to boast what arms can do, since thine no more than heaven permits, nor mine, though doubled now to trample thee as mire. He says, why are you so proud in your arms, even though I have double now, so that I can trample you just like the mud? You know, it's because God gives it to me, so I can trample you like the mud. Line 10:10. For proof, look up and read thy lot in yon celestial sign, where thou art weighed and shown how light, how weak, if thou resist. The fiend looked up and knew his mounted scale aloft. No more, but fled murmuring, and with him fled the shades of night. And that is the end of Book 4.